Blog Talk Radio.
T minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the
Hello and welcome to Rachel Out Loud. My name is Rachel Stevenson, and today we are really focusing on living an authentic life, being labelless, box-free, and proud. And I am here with a special guest, Nikki DeCaro, with DeCaro Consulting. And today we are going to talk to Nikki a little bit about her experiences at going through transition as an amazing, authentic transgender woman and her work as a consultant with DeCaro Consulting and working with corporate companies on inclusion and diversity policy. So right now, especially in this climate, things are so divided and so difficult sometimes to communicate. And this show is all about bringing people together, educating the community, and really focusing on how we can better educate you and how you can be better allies and how we can work together to create progress for our community. Without further ado, I'd like to say hello to Nikki DeCaro. How are you, Nikki?
I'm fine. How are you, Rachel?
I'm good. So tell us
here.
A little about yourself. What?
I'm happy to be
you
here. So you want to know a little bit about me? How little do you want to know?
So I know, tell us where you were brought up, that the little background stuff, and we'll get more into what you do and how you help other people.
Okay. Well, as you know, I'm living full-time as a trans woman, and I lived across the gender continuum for 58 years, celebrating my 59th year as a transgender woman and working on actively in year two to bring a lot of understanding, inclusion, and diversity to the world. I grew up in a concrete and asphalt jungle in West Philadelphia, the oldest of three, in a very traditional Italian/Sicilian family. A nerd, a bookworm, not much in terms of sports. I could spell sports, but I couldn't play sports. Finished very high in my grade school and high school classes, scholarship to St. Joseph's, what was then college, now university, and worked full-time through college. And then when I graduated college, I was fortunate enough to be hired by one company and then induced to join another and then induced to join a third. And each one of those companies, I was fortunate enough to work for very, very powerful, very smart, and very progressive mentor who showed me that I could break through barriers. I could break through knowledge barriers, education barriers, and if you have potential, that means a lot more than experience. And because of a lot of that, I was able to build confidence and a very powerful operating career and helped forge myself in the furnace of transition and be able to successfully transition and bring a lot of my business skills to bear to, A, help the company I was working for during the transition to understand who I am and why I am and help them accept who I am and do it and embrace me with open arms. And from that, I was able to understand the reason for me being here. It took me a long time to understand that, but I finally got the message that the universe was sending, that I am here to provide constructive education, opportunities to learn and to work with companies, large and small, and individuals, to coach them through the process of diversity, inclusion, and unconditional equality.
Perfect. That, you know, it's great. It's amazing when we, find our purpose. As you know, and we've worked together, I run an LGBT nonprofit organization and do some work in writing in that area as well. And I think it wasn't until I started getting involved with that nonprofit that I realized that my place on this earth was to help people and really focus on that diversity inclusion piece that's been missing, I think, in different areas for so long. So it's great to find someone like you who can relate on that level to finding that purpose in life. And so I'm excited to have you here to learn more from you, to see what you've got going on in your world, and to see what we can do together to really educate people. I think the biggest struggle we have these days is people assume they know everything and they know how to be an ally, and sometimes even ourselves within our own community, we need to learn more about how to better support each other. So I'm hoping we can do some of that today. Are you up for that, Nikki?
I am. I'm always up for a challenge, and I think this will be a good one.
So I know you gave me a little background about where you got into, your schooling and getting into this work. Can you share with us something about the transition process that not everybody knows about? You've been very open about the fact that you've gone through a full transition now, which isn't as common with the LGBT mm-hmm. or the transgender community. Can you talk a little bit about that and then maybe share some things that people may not know about the transition process and about being transgender?
Sure. The transition process is a challenge. And like anything else in life where you want to go from point A to point B or from beginning to end, there's a journey involved. And being planful is so important. If you go in to anything without a plan, you don't know where you're going to come out. And you may end up back where you started and exerted a lot of energy and made no progress. You've also got to be committed to a process and to the plan. You've got to send the message that you're confident in yourself and that this is something you really want to do and you believe in it. So if you don't believe in yourself, other people aren't going to believe in you. You've got to have a level of confidence that tells people that this is who I am. Okay, what's inside of me is still what's inside of me. The only thing that's different is the box. The operating system's the same. The box is different. And you've got to understand, you've got to give people time to adapt to the change in the box. People who you haven't experienced before your transition, that's easy. Okay, they see you, they know you, this is the first time they meet you, they have no history with you. But people who have known you for 1, 2, 5, in my case, 58 years, maybe you call it a shock, a surprise. Even if they support you, it's still going to be difficult for them to look at you and be able to get the pronouns right, to get the name right, and to introduce you properly and to talk about you in the present tense rather than in the past tense. And that's been something that I learned, and I also learned to be understanding. If you're not understanding of the people around you, it's going to be very difficult for them to be understanding of you. You get what you give, and you've got to be willing to give more than you're going to get up front.
Yeah. Really good points. I love your idea about the say that again about it, the box. I think that analogy is such a good way to look at things. So say that one more time, just so our listeners can hear what
sure.
what analogy you're using.
It's a computer analogy, right? The operating right. system, what runs you, your heart, your soul, will remain the same. It's just the exterior. The facade is different. You are always the same person inside. The facade is different. You're now expressing your true self, your authentic self.
For people who, you know, I come across this not only in the transgender community, but also in everyday community, you know, cisgender and women and men and young and old, this whole concept of confidence. You know, I think, mm-hmm. and I talk a lot about labels, how so many of our labels are limiting and how it really can affect our confidence. So what kind of advice do you have to get people, you know, especially people who are going to go through such a challenging and difficult phase in their life? What advice do you have to help them build their confidence so they can get to that point? Because I would assume that if you go through the process and you never really worked on that confidence, the happiness level afterward may not be everything you thought it would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, understand why you're doing it. Understand that you're not running away from a problem, because this is just going to give you a different set of challenges. Anything you do in life that requires you to make a change that's going to be more than minuscule or de minimis is going to be something that's going to create some upheaval, some discomfort. So you've got to understand why you're doing it. And if I can do a quick plug here, I wrote something called The Practical Guide to Gender Transition, available on Amazon. It's a very short read. They will answer a lot of questions and help anyone who's considering transition or anyone who's working with a transgender or knows a transgender to understand what it takes to go through transition. So it's making the list, being planful, knowing why you're doing it, being able to write a message. What's your message to people? What's your elevator speech? Is it consistent? Does it really define who you are? Can you explain why you're doing it? Those types of things I wrote. What got me over the hurdle was I went out and I visited my son in overseas, and before I came out to him, he was the last person in the family I came out to before I transitioned, I longhand wrote 15 pages of what's going to end up being my autobiography. And that convinced me, as I wrote about my growing up, it helped me understand that this is something I've been dealing with for a long, long time. This was either address it and be happy, or don't address it and continue to be in that twilight where I struggle with energy going back and forth across the gender continuum, which can be very debilitating. And you've got to understand that what you're going to give something up, right? You're going to give up that continuity. But you're going to gain all that energy you were using to go back and forth and to stifle the authentic you.
Right. So I want to take a step back for a minute, because I'm sure there are people on our phone, on our show today or listening in that may not know enough about what the term transgender means or cisgender or these different terms we like to throw around to be able to engage in this conversation effectively. So first of all, I just want to put out there, if anyone's interested in asking questions or calling in, the call-in number is 646-716-7979. So that line is open if anyone has questions as we go along. But let's step back, Nikki, and let's help with some definitions. Can you more effectively define the terms transgender, cisgender, so something in a very simple nomenclature that people would be able to understand if they've never really heard about these terms or don't know enough about them?
Sure. I think it's easy. Those are two terms that are easy to define. A cisgender is someone who is expressing and living their birth gender. So if you're born a male and you're a male now, you're a cisgender male, and the same thing for female. Transgender may be a little bit different, a little bit more difficult or challenging to describe. My definition of transgender is someone who is expressing across the gender continuum. So if you're born a male and you're expressing in public as a female, you're transgender. If you're a female and you're expressing as a male in public, you're transgender.
Perfect. Thank you.
Doesn't necessarily mean you have to have transitioned to be living full time.
And just to clarify with anyone listening, the term trans male is someone who transitions from female to male or a different gender identity to male, and trans female is the opposite, so transitioning to female. So I just like to make sure we all are on the same page and understand these terms so it's not getting in the way of our learning. And also to know that people who are transgender don't necessarily go through what Nikki's been through. Nikki's kind of an exception. The majority of people will not have full transition surgeries or even name changes legally. Some people don't do anything, not even take hormones. So as long as they're identifying, that person's identifying as female or male, that's what we should honor. Or the term they. I know that's very popular as well for people who don't necessarily feel like they fit on these extremes. You know, Nikki, we talk a lot about – go ahead.
I wanted to reiterate your point. That's very, very important, and that's the first stage in the process of a transgender being comfortable with going forward with the transition. It's none of us wake up one morning and say, I think I'll transition, I'll do it today. It's a process that takes a while, and we will live on both sides, and we may tell people that we're transgender long before we decide to transition to try to get the comfort level built up. So understanding the fact that a transgender doesn't have to be someone who's living as the non-birth gender full-time is very important to develop understanding and to keep the bonds of family and friends and spouse and those other bonds strong.
And I talk a lot, and we're going to be doing this more and more as the show continues with other guest speakers, or guests too, that our society is such a polarizing society. We like to box people into black and white, gay, gay, straight, tall, short, fat, thin, etc. And we often don't realize that the reality is that we're not really that black and white. We're really on a continuum of gray, and I prefer to call it rainbow, of course. But we like to label people, and we really need to get away from boxing people into certain labels and telling them who they are. And we really need to start shutting up and listening to what people are saying and how people are identifying. And I think that's so important, especially during this transition process. If you have a transgender child or friend or sibling or parent, that it's really important to listen to what they are saying and their label for themselves. So any other thoughts on labels?
Again, reiterating that very good point you're making, America is a melting pot. Right? It was formed 400 years ago by people who were trying to flee from oppression. And ever since the founding of this country, there have been different nationalities, different religions, males and females. Lots of different people came here to create what we are today in terms of a very diverse society. It's just the melting pot has different ingredients today than it had 400 years ago. And as long as we understand that diversity and variety is what makes us special, then accepting other people for who they are and what they are, that should come as become second nature for people. And you're right. The labels put people in a box, and they could create biases and preconceived notions and prejudices. The sooner we relinquish labels and the sooner we say, you bleed red, your money's green, that's all I need to know about you, I think the better off we're all going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I also think on the other side, even from the perspective of being so, progressive in the areas of diversity and inclusion, it's also important for us as advocates for the LGBT community to also listen and empathize to people who don't know enough to have a strong opinion, or maybe, you know, we've been through this a lot with the political climate lately, that we get so angry when someone doesn't stand up to support LGBT equality or rights. But I think we also need to listen to what they're saying and kind of learn where they're coming from and where they're at what point they're at. And how do you handle those situations? I mean, obviously, I'm sure you've come across it where someone doesn't even know enough to form an opinion, and they just form an opinion based on their religious upbringing or their what their parents have told them or their friends have told them or society tells them. How do you begin those conversations to open minds?
That can be challenging at times, but I start with a smile, because a smile is very disarming. And if you come into a discussion saying, just listen to me, let me hear what you have to say, and let me answer questions for you about who I am. But let me tell you that I'm here as a person, and I'm here like you as a person. So let's talk for a minute. And I understand that you may have difficulty with me. That's understandable. That's human nature. Don't judge me. Know who I am. If you don't understand who I am, that's fine. I'm happy to teach you. I'm happy to tell you some things about me. But I also want you to understand that I laugh and I cry like you laugh and cry. And if you say things that hurt me, I'll cry. But think about it the other way. If the situations were reversed, how would you feel if I decided that I was going to prejudge you and I was going to not like you or, God forbid, hate you? How would you react to that? Would you like to be the minority in this situation? So think about it from that perspective. Suppose, and then take it to another extreme. Suppose your child came home and said, well, I am fill in the blank, and that's not conventional, not what you're accustomed to. How would you react?
Mm-hmm.
And I leave
yeah.
that open. And sometimes you get a mouth-dropping aha moment, an epiphany. Other times you get a dismissal, and then they walk away. You can't change everybody. You can't expect to make everybody happy. So my goal is to try to educate as much as possible. And those who choose not to want to be educated, I think we have to let them go on their way and find their way, because they're lost.
Right. You made we were chatting the other day, over dinner. Nikki's amazing. I love spending time with her outside of work-related stuff too. But you mentioned the other day when we were chatting about, you gave another analogy that I thought was really strong, and I'm forgetting what exact words you said, but it was all about bringing people who are the fence analogy that you mentioned. I think that was a great analogy. I'd love for you to share it.
Sure. I look at the world, I look at opinions in across a continuum. There's the extreme left, let's call it the extreme left, the extreme one side, the extreme right, or the extreme other side, and then the middle. How much we could spend a lot of energy moving people from one step closer who are at one extreme, closer to that fence, or we could spend our energy taking the people who are on our side of the fence, keeping them there by being polite, kind, respectful, responsible, being a teacher and a supporter of them so that there's mutual understanding. And then we can spend that energy getting people off the fence and onto our side. It takes as much energy or less energy to move a person off the fence onto our side as it does to move that person at the far extreme left one step closer to the fence. There are always going to be people. You're never going to get unanimity. And if you try for unanimity, you're going to be frustrated beyond belief. So go for the majority, and I think that's where you're going to find the most peace in your life.
Yeah, I see. You know, I love that analogy, and I have actually thought of it a lot this week because, you know, so many of us are on Facebook, and it's so easy for us to get wrapped up. If you go on Facebook, I think anybody's newsfeed right now is all about the march and the politics and all these very dividing topics. And it's so easy to get sucked into that. And I've been thinking a lot this week when I kind of get into some of those conversations, you know, is this a person that is on one side of the fence or the other? You know, are they on top of the fence? Because if they're not anywhere near the fence, do I want to waste my energy at this point motivating them or pushing them or educating them where I could take someone who's maybe kind of in the middle and wants to learn and work on pushing them a little bit more over the fence? So I want you to know I've used that this week, and it's been very helpful to me. I think it's a great tool and a great visual for people to think about when they're deciding whether they want to jump into a controversial discussion or a debate about something that could be pointless in the long term or exhausting.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm humbled and honored that you've taken those words and are using them.
Absolutely. I like those little gems. I try to hold on to those gems. So I do have a question that I think, and I've asked you this before, but I wanted to share here. I'm curious to know, you know, as someone who has been through the transition process and knows what a challenge it is, but has also turned this, you know, challenge into this incredible career and opportunity, would you do it all over again? Or would you come back being born as a female biologically?
I don't think I'd want to go through 47 years of struggle across the gender continuum, the first 42 of those years not really knowing what a transgender was and thinking I was the only person in the world. So I would love to come back as a woman, born as a woman, so I had the birthright, and then experiencing all the things that a woman experiences, including the opportunity to bring children into the world. That's something that I lament that I'll never be able to do.
Yeah. Now, and I think it offers people a perspective, and that I'm intrigued too. So I appreciate you sharing. I know it's a little bit more of a personal conversation, so I really appreciate you sharing with me as well as our listeners.
That's okay. I appreciate the opportunity to share it.
For someone who, let's talk about the transgender, the average or a majority of transgender community members who may not necessarily have the funds or have the support they need to go through a transition process. What are some, I know you have a book that came out and we're going to talk about that a little bit more, but what are kind of the maybe top five tips you'd offer that person to make sure that they feel supported and, you know, they may not have all the financial ability to go through everything and get what they need, maybe like you have or somebody else has. What's your advice to that type of person?
Well, if you're in a situation where transition is near or impossible, it's important to have a support network, regardless of whether you're transitioning. And in life, generally, a support system is necessary. So I would encourage that if you're feeling anxiety, you're feeling depression, or you're feeling other thoughts that are making you uneasy, I would encourage you to find a qualified therapist, someone who works with a person who has your condition. So if you're talking about transgender, someone who's got deep, significant couch time experience working with transgenders, and preferably from referrals if you know others who are using a particular psychologist, psychiatrist, therapist to engage that person. It's very important to have professional resources if indeed you need them. And then you need a support network. If you're a transgender, make friends in the community. Find people who are near you. Go to a support group meeting. Go to a PFLAG meeting. PFLAG meetings can be very beneficial because you get to hear from parents and you can share your experiences with those parents, and they're not judgmental. And unfortunately, if you can transition, then you need to make peace with where you are. If you have a spouse, I would encourage you, if you can, speak with your spouse or get help trying to bring this to your spouse's attention if indeed you want to do that. You have to figure out how deep into your life you want to go with revealing being a transgender. And that I can't counsel you on, but I can tell you that you've got to make peace with it. And please, 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 if you run into a situation where you're feeling like you don't have any energy left, seek professional help and don't do something drastic or dramatic that could really bring a lot of pain not only to you but the rest of the people in your life.
Yeah. And I think there are oftentimes people don't necessarily know there are support systems out there. There are organizations, nonprofits that are designed exactly for this. And people don't always know. And then, of course, and we know how high homelessness rates are and suicide rates are within that transgender community, especially with people of color. But there are groups all over the country, even in some of the more suburban areas. You just have to kind of look for them. I know Philadelphia is where I live in that area, and they have the Mazzoni Center, which is a great group it's the largest LGBT health service around our area. But they definitely have, there's lots of resources online as well. So I guess I would encourage people to Google and find resources before, you know, to just know what all the options they might have in that area.
I'm sorry, if I can offer something. I'm happy to take, you can go to my website, nikkidecaro.com. If you have questions or anything you want me to follow up with you on, please send me an email from my website and I'll respond.
Perfect. So let's talk a little bit about current events just for a minute, and then we'll move on to a little bit more about your business and diversity in the workplace. So as we know right now, things are a little divided. We've mentioned this a little bit today already. And there are a lot of community members, both transgender as well as just the broader LGBT community, women, all sorts of minority groups that are a little nervous with the current upcoming administration or the current administration as of this week. So any thoughts or advice on, you know, how I think transgender community especially has lots of fears about feeling included and feeling supported and having rights, not necessarily rights taken away that they didn't already have, but not progressing forward and gaining more rights that we've been trying to fight for so long. Any feedback on that or any perspective on that you'd like to offer as someone who's part of the community?
Sure. Of course, this political climate provides a lot of reason to have consternation and to be concerned. But we also have to realize that this is relatively new. Being transgender is relatively new to society as something that's open and in the public eye. I consider when Caitlyn Jenner came out, that's when this really blossomed, and we became front and center in the public's mind. We've got complications and we've got complexities in our movement that other movements didn't have because we look different when we transition than we did the day before we transitioned. Or if we go across the gender continuum, we're going to look different than our birth gender. Well, we have to remember that the different nationalities, the different sexual preferences, those groups had to go through a lot to get to where they are. You know, and the gay movement, for example, it took over 40 years to gain the amount of perspective and the amount of respect and acceptance in society as they have today. You know, the blacks, the African Americans, they've been at it for 151 years, and there's still discrimination. So we have to understand that just because we say we are, we're not going to get the rights immediately, and we have to educate people. As you said, Rachel, education is important. Understanding, empathy is important. But understanding that this is a journey that we're going to have to take together with the right attitude about educating people. And of course, we can have concerns, but we should have nonviolent protest if we're going to protest, and we should be constructive about the way we approach our elected representatives, and understand that society is what drives the government to make decisions. If we stay the course, we continue to move society in our direction, which we will do constructively, we will gain ground every day, every week, every month, every year, until we're just another person on the street that people don't look at twice.
Right. What do you say to the person that says to you, you know what, Nikki, it's been a tough year, but, you know, Trump won the election, move on. What do you say to that person? Because there's a lot of that going on right now, especially toward minority communities.
When you say move on, what does that mean?
There are a lot of people, especially on social media. I know you're not on there as often as I am. There are days that I wish I wasn't on there at all. but there are times where someone, you'll voice a concern about their equality or something like that, and you'll have people either who supported Trump or who didn't necessarily and just want things to just kind of blow over and continue. They'll say to you, as someone who is marginalized, move on, get over it, move forward. So what do you say in response to that to someone who's telling you to move on and get over it?
Well, I would say I am moving forward. I need you to accept the fact that I'm moving forward and this is me. So I'm happy to accept your candidate as long as you respect who I am and allow me to be who I am. Because there's what else do you say to a person like that? I mean, you're not going to fight them. You're not going to argue with them because it's their opinion. But they need to understand that we have rights and we will continue to advocate for our rights. And eventually the political climate will change like it has over the last 30, 40, 50, 60 years to be more accepting.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's important.
That's a tough one, Rachel. That's really a tough one to answer because there are a lot of different perspectives out there on what moving on means, and there's a lot of conflict at the state level and some inertia at the federal level. So I get all that. I am not trying to make that any less important than it already is. But I would say being an alarmist is not going to solve anybody's problems.
Yeah, and I've noticed that, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, people put on Facebook or social media what they think only, and a lot of times I think they aren't as open to listening. And again, listening has to happen on both sides, or you don't have unity, you don't have collaboration, and you don't have progress. I've said this many times before that in my opinion, the biggest thing about progress is and communication is education and listening. And if you don't have those two pieces, you don't move forward. And so when you go on Facebook and someone says, you know, something negative, I even myself have to get better about just not responding, because we're better saying, you know what, we appreciate your opinion. We're going to continue moving forward with progress. Now you don't get stuck in this back and forth where no progress has been created. Then it's just a circle. And you feel like you're on a little, the wheel and the rat on a wheel continuing to go around and not getting anywhere.
So I think it's very important to understand. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rachel. I keep interrupting you. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I did not hear you speaking. My apologies. Go ahead. What were you going to say, Nikki?
I wanted to say two things in that regard. Reaction versus response. When somebody says something to you and you immediately jump on whatever they say, realize that they're in control. They are eliciting a reaction from you. If you take a step back, think about it, and respond in a constructive way. Now, if you can respond with fact, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to refute fact. But when you argue someone's opinion, you're never going to win because it's the person's opinion. They own it. And if you're going to fight opinion, you're going to spend a lot of energy and get nowhere.
Right. No, absolutely. And it happens a lot, too, especially with people who are deeply religious. You know, I try to even talk to my own, you know, fellow community members that if you're talking with someone who has deep-seated, like, fear or that, you know, they're going to meet their maker and they truly believe that something isn't right or something isn't, you know, accepting someone who's gay or transgender is totally against what they have always believed, we have to at least understand and try to empathize with that before we try to pull them forward and help, you know, progress their thought process. So combating someone, especially someone like that who's very, very religious, having a back and forth with them until we start opening our minds and listening and educating, will also, like you said, just be pointless. There's no way to bring them forward without listening first. All right, you ready to talk a little bit about your business, Nikki?
I am, as little as you like.
All right, so I want to ask you a few things about your business, what you do, how you help companies, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about ERG groups and diversity and inclusion in the workplace. So I want to start and give everyone an idea of what you do. So tell me, you know, you mentioned in the beginning how you came into this consulting business, but tell me a little bit more about what your consulting business looks like, and then we'll talk a little about your speaker business. So primarily, let's focus on the actual consulting work you do. Give us a little taste of what that looks like.
Okay. I am an advocate, a very strong vocal, and I consider myself a very articulate advocate for unconditional equality, which I believe is the foundation for everything else we do, and diversity and inclusion. I teach, train, and coach companies and employees on what all those mean and how you can use those three concepts in your workplace and in your work environment to build a more diverse work environment that reflects the community around you and your customer base. And also help people understand that diversity and inclusion is a very powerful tool to increase productivity, to increase employee satisfaction, to increase employee retention, and to open and to reduce bias. Because bias is such an innovation blocker that if you can eliminate bias in the workplace, you not only increase innovation, but you make the thought process about accepting diverse and being inclusive towards people. You take it home with you, and you adopt it at home, and it becomes automatic, so that if you have an experience, like most people will, at home in an environment that's not conventional, they're not accustomed to, they've already gotten the foundation on how to deal with that at work. They deal with it at home, and it becomes automatic. Then when you come to work, you've got a better relationship with your employees, with your colleagues, and you're happier, and your employees are happier. And I try to engage employees to understand that deep down inside, the bias is something they can overcome. So my teaching process is I go into an organization and I engage the audience actively and I draw out the knowledge they have. And whatever knowledge I feel they may fall short, I'll just top off their knowledge tanks. I don't lecture. I don't dictate. I help you understand how much you really do know to help you tear down the walls of bias so that you can be a free thinker and more innovative in the way you look at people and be more accepting.
Yeah, and I think it's so, and I love the whole concept you talk about bringing it to the workplace and then being able to use what you have in the workplace and using it back home. Because I think oftentimes companies, not all companies, I think many companies live that and breathe that and use that every day. But I think there are many companies that think about the smaller picture. They think about, you know, making sure that the workspace is safe and inclusive and making sure everyone feels at home and equal in the workplace. But what I think is oftentimes missed is this whole concept that what you create at the workplace can also be brought back to the home. And then if there's a child who comes home who says, you know, I'm struggling with my sexual orientation or my gender identity, you've already learned in the workplace and you can utilize that at home. And I love that you talk about that because I think we miss that a lot when we talk about corporate trainings and diversity and inclusion policies at work.
Yeah, the whole process of training, education has got to be bidirectional. It used to be the old way of teaching and training was you stand in front of a group and you tell them what you know, and they absorb 5% of it and they forget 95% an hour after they leave. The only way to bake it into people is to engage them and get them to think about it and to exchange ideas actively while you're there.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, you know, making sure that I think too, it used to be we would just, like you said, we'd be lectured too. And our society has changed. I mean, we are a video, social media, activity, entertainment society. So we are learning differently, and especially with the new generation. I know we've talked about the generations teaching and educating generation levels differently. That's changing also. So we have creating more engagement instead of just teaching or lecturing. as well. You mentioned the other day in a meeting we had about the different generations and how they learn. Touch on that for a little bit, because I think it's important for people to think about that, whether we're educating someone at home or we're educating a friend or in the workplace.
Sure. There are probably five generations that we touch, from the baby boomers, which I'm a member of, to all the way down to Generation Z. And every one of these generations has been brought up differently. Our generation, the oldest generation, has been brought up with, give me something to do and I'll do it. And I'll give it to you, and at the end of the day, I'll go home knowing I checked off three things on my to-do list. The younger generations, the millennials and the X, Y, and Z generations, they all are in this, as you said, this socially interactive social media environment, and they're bombarded constantly with information, and their concept of things can change almost on a dime. These younger generations want to know that they're engaged, they want to know that they're appreciated, and not necessarily only monetarily. They want to be recognized. You did a good job. Tell the person they did a good job. Don't wait to the end of the year to review them. Do it more promptly. And engage them in groups. They want to think about things. They want to give you their opinion. They want to do some pushback, and they want to do some push and pull, because that's the way they're being raised. They're being raised on an environment where opinions are counted, thought process is counted, and no one person comes into the room with all the answers. I think we have to understand that, and we have to be able to adapt to that. Otherwise, we won't have continuity in the workplace, and we won't have continuity amongst our colleagues, and that makes for a lot of disruption that's not necessarily good.
Yeah. And what so a lot of companies now, obviously, you have a lot of younger generations coming into the workplace. Who many are more progressive-minded when it comes to diversity and inclusion. They have transgender friends. They have, you know, lesbian, gay, bisexual family members even. They're friends with a melting pot of community members. Maybe they were brought up in public schools that are very diverse. So they bring this open-minded attitude into the workplace, and they want to create change and implement diversity and inclusion policies. And then you have that older generation that's been in the workplace, you know, for 20 or 30 years, because when they were younger, their parents were with careers forever, and they too did the same thing, which we know is not the same as much anymore. So when you approach a company like that and you're trying to get everybody on board, what are those first couple of steps you take with the company to make sure that both the young and energized ones and the ones that want to create progress are communicating effectively with the older generation who may not be as open-minded to some of these changes?
I like to sit down with senior management of a company and ask them why I'm there. And typically I'll find out that they need help reviewing their HR policies. And I know that's the first clue that they're not plugged into their younger generations, because they're into writing policies, saying they're done and putting them in the drawer, and if you have a problem, get the policy out. Then I ask, okay, how often do you interact with your people, and how does that interaction go, and what types of reward programs do you have? And then I hear, well, you know, we can't afford to have bonus programs, then I know they don't understand their generations enough. So I'll give them some instruction on things I think they need to do, and I'll look for pushback. And if there's any pushback, I'll give them fact about why it matters to think about things differently and to think cross-generational. And I'll also remind them of one very, very important thing. At least I live by this. The older generations, more senior generations, have responsibility to do knowledge transfer. You know, we're not going to be around in the workforce forever, and we have some really solid knowledge. We recognize the more mature, senior people in the organization have a lot of knowledge, and we invest in them the opportunity to be mentors. I've found that breaks through some of that I don't understand the younger generation barrier, because now you've given the more mature generation, the older generation, an opportunity to be a teacher. And it gives them, I wouldn't call it power, but it gives them some responsibility to take a younger person under their wing and nurture those people. And that creates a bond.
Yes, and then they might be more receptive when the younger generation comes and says, hey, we really need to start addressing this. There's that bond created, and it might be easier to pull the older generation on board, or the more conservative, you know, community on board with that. No, I think that's a great way to form some of those bonds. You are also a speaker. I've heard you speak. I know I was able to connect with you at the Disrupt HR event out in Philly, where we talk about real HR issues that are happening in the workplace. And we, in those talks, aren't necessarily as HR friendly as we have to be at the workplace. So tell me a little bit about your speaking business and your experience with Disrupt HR, which I want to make sure everyone realizes Disrupt HR is similar to a TED Talk, in a way that it's a very short time frame, but in fact, this is, I think it's 5 minutes, if I'm correct, that you had to get your point across, which if TED Talks are intense, this is just escalated even more so. So tell me a little bit about your speaking business, what you really like to talk about, and how your experience at Disrupt HR was.
Okay. My speaking business is geared towards, as I had said earlier, drawing knowledge out of a team of people. Doesn't matter what the team is or who comprises the team. I like to engage the team. I like to wander through. I like to graze through the audience. And I'll warn them when I step into a room, don't sit in the back because I'll walk back there and call on you. I want everyone to engage because I want to help them understand that there's knowledge in this group of people. And I've found some really amazing experiences where in certain groups, a person who has certain knowledge has not had a venue to express that knowledge. And they were tagged by people in the group during that meeting as, oh, you have expertise in that area. I'm going to come to you if I have problem fill in the blank. I find that's very rewarding to create that engagement. It may not happen because those people don't work in the same department. So that's a big goal, is to create interaction and to be a facilitator. I'm not a speaker that brings specific knowledge that you don't have. You have it in your DNA. That knowledge exists there. I'm going to draw it out, help you understand you have it, because that's more rewarding. And then I will fill in the blanks for you. If I feel you're missing a fact, I'll deliver a fact for you. I never give you my opinion and expect you to take it. I challenge you to find information that supports what we talked about today, and ensure that when you bring things up amongst your colleagues, do it in a respectful way. So that's my speaking business.
And so how was Disrupt HR for you? It looked intense, and I wanted to be on that stage speaking myself, but after I saw a few speakers, I realized how intense it actually looked.
Well, it was fascinating. As I wrote, it's intense and energizing. There are no cue cards, few words on slides, and 5 incredibly intense minutes of reaching an audience on a raised stage in hopes that the up to 250 sets of eyes are focused on you and the minds attached to those eyes are processing what you're saying. It's not my typical venue. I don't typically get up and bang an audience with 5 minutes worth of constant me. But it was I had written the proposal. I had written my proposal. It was accepted. I did my 20 slides. I changed them 14 times. I did the presentation 35 times in front of friends. And as soon as they called my name, it was like, if you can draw the analogy of horses in the chute at a race, the gun goes off, and you're out of that chute, and you are running for your life to get to the finish line before anybody else. I was off like a shot, and what I said on that stage, conglomeration of the 35 practice sessions, and it wasn't one particular session. It just came to me, and I felt the energy, and it was so energizing, so fascinating, so daunting, and I learned so much about myself in those 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible, and the difference in a talk like this, as opposed to like a TED Talk, you not only have to give this speech in 5 minutes, but you have these slides. It's 20 slides. Is that the requirement, Nikki?
Yes, 20 slides. I'm rotating every 15 seconds, and the slides should have few or no words on them.
Yeah, and that's a pretty intense thing, not only to keep up with your words, but also to have the slides going at the same time and get that timing. So I loved watching you speak. I think it was great and lots of energy. Definitely great points that you made. You're obviously a very effective and eloquent speaker too. So it was fun to watch. I was glad that you got to do it before me, so I could take notes.
You'll do fine. You have an innate ability to reach people. You'll do fine. I encourage you to submit a proposal, because I think they'll love whatever you pitch to present.
I appreciate it. So, so let's talk about your books for a minute. So you have, and one more time, I want to remind people, if you have any questions for Nikki, we have about 10 minutes left, but if you have any questions, you can call in at 646-716-7979. So if you again, 646-716-7979. I love the 716 part. It's my birthday. But so let's talk about your books for a minute. So you have these guides that you're offering on Amazon. I think you have four currently, and you have another one coming, or you have a white page coming. Tell us about what you're writing about these days.
Sure. I have written four guides for gender transition, one for the transgender. And these are 10,000 words or less. So they're easy reads. They're not nothing about my life, nothing about the tragedies or the struggles I face. It's all objective. And there are some of the guides have up to 33 references, factual references that I found in different places in books and on the internet. So you can check them out. They're all footnoted and properly annotated in my guides. The guides I developed because I read a number of books while I was going through my transition, and I found the books to be helpful in some regards, but incredibly long. And if you're transitioning, I don't have an attention span to read a 300-page book. And I thought that it'd be really good to objectify the concept of transition in a non-emotional way and provide one for the transgender, one for the families, one for the employer, and one for the educator. So there are four separate guides. They're each 10,000 words or less. They're available in booklet form on Amazon. They're also available in ebook. My current project, which is just about finished, is to write reports. I come across, from time to time, opinions that appear on different websites or in the press. And the opinions are either turning the facts upside down or they're not fact-based at all. So this paper, it's a 12-page paper. It's about 8,000 words. It's got 34 references in it. It talks about transgender being a chronic medical condition that needs to be treated, and it also talks about comparison of how other similar chronic medical conditions have been treated, like mental illness and substance use disorders, and how long it took for society to acknowledge that these should be mainstream and should be treated with the same respect as other medical conditions. And I also compare to refute some of the misinformation in the marketplace. I put at least three references for each statement that I make in there, supported by empirical data, by good research, by trusted researchers. And I point out a comparison between the success of gender reassignment and gender surgery to other surgeries, like heart cancer surgery, open heart surgery, and then there's one other surgery that I quoted. And I showed favorably the comparisons of the success rates after 6 months and a year and 5 years compared to the equivalent of 28 studies that were compiled over 50 years that showed that up to 80% of sexual reassignment, whether it's surgical or non-surgical, has been successful for over 1,800 people who were part of the research studies. And I'm working on that, and I'm working on another paper. I've got a very good friend who's doing some of the background research for me to focus on the issues with this concept of a problem with where we take care of a bodily function that we call the bathroom. And it's very important for people to understand, for politicians as well as public to understand, none of this is black and white, as you said in the beginning, Rachel. A lot of this is, there's a thousand shades of gray here. People need to understand where the facts are and where the conjecture is, and to not create opinions and conclusions based on things that are not factual.
And and you raised some good points there. I wish we had more time because the whole topic of the bathroom conversation could last for at least an hour or two or longer. I think it's been lasting for the last, many years. So we have about 5 minutes left. I want to ask you some fun questions. And again, for anyone who has any questions for Nikki, if you are not ready to ask them publicly on the radio, Nikki, remind us, just so we make sure everybody gets your contact information, where can people reach you if they have some more maybe private questions that they don't want to ask publicly?
Sure. You can reach me on my email at Nikki, N-I-K-K-I, at DICARO1.com, Nikki@DiCaro1.com. Or you can reach me on my website, and you can contact me through there at www.NikkiDiCaro.com, NikkiDiCaro.com.
Yeah. And Nikki will do, she does talks, corporate consulting, where she's working with a couple of large national corporate companies to get them some diversity inclusion programs going, the employee resource groups, otherwise known as ERGs. So please reach out to Nikki if you have any needs for that. She's incredible and very easy to work with. So I'm going to ask you a couple of fun questions, if that's all right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Go ahead.
So tell us, this is an easy one. What's your favorite movie and why?
Well, my favorite movie is It's a Wonderful Life. And every time I watch it, I cry.
Like my wife.
Oh, my God. It was Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed are incredible. The story reminds me that everyone impacts the life of another. I don't care who you are, how much of a struggle you've had in your life, you still have influence on other people. And each of us adds uniqueness and value to other people. Every day, I remember the value of what I bring to other people, and it energizes me to get up in the morning and to do good every day and to not let other people negatively impact me. I want to leave a permanent and lasting legacy of positivity in my wake, and that's what I woke up one day before I transitioned and realized that's my calling. I want to leave a legacy. I want to be remembered for doing positive things and to help people to understand that positivity is important.
No, I love it. I give goosebumps just listening to you. You know, it's funny because every Christmas we go through the whole conversation. I go through this with my wife, Faye, for people who don't know her name. And we talk about the movies we want to watch during the holiday season. And that's always the first one that she brings up. It's been around for a while, and she just every year she wants to watch it. And it's funny because in the beginning I'm typically not as eager to jump on to watch it, but I have to say it's the only Christmas movie whose message rings so true to me and who I hold on to that message every day of the year, not just during Christmas. Because there are times where I have a really struggle, you know, a day where I'm really struggling, whether it's some anxiety stuff or chronic pain stuff. And then I think, you know, that movie, the whole thought of what would happen if I wasn't here? You know what I mean? How would life change? What's the ripple effect or the domino effect of me not being here? And that is what keeps me giving me my purpose. And I think there's so many messages in that movie that are incredible. So one more question, and then a real quick one, and then we're going to wrap it up shortly. So the world wants to know, Nikki, who is your celebrity crush?
That was a tough question. My celebrity crush is Bradley Cooper. I've watched him in different roles, and he was really hot in American Sniper. But I also loved him in Silver Linings Playbook. He's got those eyes capture me, and that smile is just so disarming.
Even though I have a wife, I kind of have a little crush on him too. So we'll. But I also have a crush on Ellen DeGeneres, so it kind of it goes both ways over here. Well, we are going to wrap it up shortly. Again, Nikki DiCaro, thank you so much for joining us. We have lots more information available. If you also go to www.outword.com, you can find out a lot more about Nikki. There's an interview on there with her. So thank you again. Thanks for joining us on Rachel Out Loud. Live your life label-less, box-free, and proud, and we will see you next time.
Thanks, Rachel. See ya.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want.